Yeah, can we start with some breaking news, Simo?
Go on. Let's hear it. Come on. You've heard it here first. What is it?
So that's my breaking news sound effect impression. We're really pleased, to be serious, to say that Richard and his team at Move On Removals and Storage, who were on this podcast, have been shortlisted for Trader of the Year in the Witch Awards.
Witch Awards?
The Witch Awards.
Witch Awards?
Don't start all that nonsense.
The Right Move.
The Property Podcast with
Andrew Simmons and JP.
Hello there. We return in style, loads of usable advice on the podcast and opinion on selling your home, buying your next one, or investing in property. So welcome to it. Some real eye-catching stuff, I think, this time, Simo, as we hear from Michael Hall of a really skilled and exciting business called Envision Studios. They're based in Newcastle upon Tyne, and they use CGI for architectural visualizations.
Yes, indeed. And then we're going south, aren't we? We're going into Somerset.
Yeah, and why are we going into Somerset, Simo?
Well, all will become clear in a minute. But, you know, it comes from that one time when one of my friends said that there's a TV show called Selling Sunset, yeah. But we're going Selling Somerset.
Right. I think I'm beginning to get the idea, the outline of this idea. Also, the self-build we've been covering in Grafton Regis in Northamptonshire with Alan. It's getting nearer and nearer to the end. Alan's going to come on, give us the up-to-date, because I don't think there's too much more to do.
Indeed, and we're going to hear from Charlie Lambden, fresh from his bout with Russell Quirk, and see what Charlie's got to say.
There's also a chance to get Simo's expert view on whether the idea, the concept of an open house is a good or bad thing for marketing your property.
Throw me the keys.
Selling, buying, investing. Are you making the right move?
Right, let's crack on then. Selling Somerset. This is going to be a laugh, Simo, because you've got great stories left, right and centre. So we thought, well, you thought it was time to kind of get them down.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun, isn't it? You know, we're taking it to Selling Sunset. We're taking it to Selling Somerset, and I think it's one of those things where, yeah, we've got a load of anecdotes. We've also got a lot of things that we see day to day that, you know, maybe people don't see the humorous and the behind the scenes of property, and some of the rather interesting, let's say, things that we come across. We thought it would make good TV, but why not? Let's just start here on the podcast and see what people think.
As you pull back that twitching curtain in only the way you can. Looking forward to that, I have to say. Very much looking forward to it. Now, he's one of the directors of Envision Studios in Newcastle, and their thing, in a nutshell, it's really great-looking CGI visualizations of properties. So architectural firms go to them, individuals for self-builds, etc. Let's bring on Michael Hall.
Welcome, Michael, and thanks for sparing us the time. It probably makes a bit of sense, really, for us to kick off with an introduction about what you guys do at Envision.
So if you asked us that question 6 months ago, it would have been a very, very different answer to what it is now. And the reason I say that is because, as I'm sure you're aware, being in the sector, there's a lot of diversification and there's a lot of need for change. And, you know, the way I'm sure you've discussed it numerous times already with numerous different people, either on the show or behind closed doors, but with the sort of emerging ways of AI and how that's impacting the market, you know, what we do as an architectural visualization company is just sort of ever changing. And I think as a property architectural visualization company that predominantly caters for architects, self-builders, property developers, be it private or commercialized, it's something that we sort of have to think about and ask ourselves quite regularly. But I think the rounded response, the obvious response, is that Envision Studios is effectively a design studio that specializes in architectural visualization, mainly on property, be it residential or commercial, but certainly not limited to. We also have extensive background in working with products, market materials, and then a few other little things that we've sort of picked up over the last couple of months.
So had you seen a gap in the market for this type of work?
Being honest, I've sort of always had a bit of an entrepreneurial mind in the sense of, I've said, you know, the stereotypical answer, I've always sort of wanted to do something myself or do something in business. And being completely honest, I have absolutely no background in business whatsoever, qualification-wise. I've got zero qualifications to my name through business. It's exclusively design-orientated. And I think, if anything, that sort of gave me a little bit of an edge to others in that I was sort of going into it blind and sort of always wanted to do something on my own. And, you know, the obvious response, you know, not wanting to have a boss and sort of be your own boss and have that sort of freedom is something that kind of always appealed to me. And once I met my business partner through pretty much the first couple of days of university a couple of years ago now, it was always something that we talked about. And obviously with COVID sort of emerging around 2019, 2020, 2021, we sort of noticed a huge shift in people wanting to do their houses up. And it was something that a lot of people were making public that, you know, the materials, for instance, were scarce because everybody was trying to get wood, was trying to get pallets to, you know, to do those little garden projects and all that good stuff. And at the time, if I'm being honest, I think it was just an element of good timing in conjunction with finishing university and sort of getting things off the ground and specializing in the softwares that we did at the time. It was in conjunction with everybody sort of wanting to get the house done. So we just sort of tapped into that. And I think that was probably the driving factor, to be honest.
And I suppose, you know, like any business, you'll get a different kind of wide cocktail of different projects. But yes, sometimes somebody, architects, et cetera, may come to you and be very prescriptive, very exacting about what it is and kind of almost set it all out. But there are others where you get this creative free license and I guess you just, you can run wild with it.
Yeah, that's the sort of project that we love. It's unfortunately not a project that we get very often on the basis that, you know, 9 times out of 10 when we get commissioned, be it by a developer or an architect, the spec and sort of the reins have already kind of been pulled. And that's where we have to be a bit more strict on ourselves. And I'm sure my business partner Cam would say the exact same thing. Although we are creatives, we've sort of had to shut the door on personal styles and preferences on the basis that, you know, if we have a private client, for instance, who wants an extension, but they've just got plans and they can see the externals from what the architect's done, but they need some assistance with the inside. Although we don't necessarily brand ourselves as interior designers, despite having a qualification in interior design, it's something that, you know, we love to do. But more often than not, if a client says they like a certain style or, you know, they've seen something on Pinterest or Instagram, for instance, and they want to see that replicated within their own space, it's something that we have to then just kind of adapt to without huge influence of, you know, I might like one thing, you might like another, you might like gothic sort of vibes, you know, blacks, grays, dark blues, purples. But if my preference is old wood traditional, where it's very, very sort of cozy cottage vibes, then they're immediately conflicting. So we've just kind of had to shut the doors on our own personal preferences and just sort of be guided a bit more by the client. The projects where we sort of get told there's a huge list of fixtures, fittings, you know, furniture or styles or whatever that the client may or may not like, just kind of crack on and produce something that you feel is best suited based on the space. They're the sorts of projects that we just absolutely love with and do totally run with, for sure.
I mean, it is lovely, beautiful looking stuff that you guys produce, because the key here is, at any time, that'll be £5, please. One of the key, that'll be, or a pint of beer. One of the key things, the phrases I think that will resonate with most people, and almost like, I guess, suppose non-techie people, is photorealistic. So the stuff that you produce you know, with no disrespect to the people that, you know, have the fly-throughs and stuff on Grand Designs or any of the other sort of shows, Your Homemade Perfect, etc., you know, they can be a bit blocky, can't they? A bit generic, a bit basic. So, you know, a wall is just like this kind of, you know, white filled in line, a solid, yeah, you know, block. Whereas you do stuff that it looks like you can walk up to it.
Yeah, I think we've sort of found our selling point over the last couple of months. And if anything, it's a shame it's a podcast, really, because I've got some stuff that I could show you that sort of shows the contrast of where we started in relation to the quality and sort of where we are now.
Yeah, yeah.
And there has been an awful lot of experimentation over the last, I would say, 12 to 18 months. Mm-hmm. We said, wrapping up last year, that 2023 for us was the year of experimentation, on the basis that, going back to what I said at the very, very start about AI and sort of other things emerging, the software that we had previously been using didn't really cut the mustard, so to speak, and it's just been sort of an ever-changing battle to figure out what the most efficient and effective way to do things are, but also what sort of delivers the end user, be it a private client or a business, the highest quality product. And if you type in architectural visualization, property visualization, whatever it may be, into Google, you'll see a spectrum. And our USP is that we like to say to when we're onboarding new clients, for instance, that we're slap bang up the middle. We're a sort of perfect blend of both. You've got entry level, which is what you referenced before, where it's quick, it's cheap, it's easy, but you know, you get what you sort of pay for in that instance, where some people it might absolutely do the trick. But to someone who, you know, if you're dropping £150,000 on a huge property renovation or a massive extension, that's a lot of money to an awfully lot of people. And if you can't see a realistic product of what that is going to, not could, what it is going to look like based on us sort of following the spec down to the last detail and following the plans all the way through, then that is a lot of money to throw at something. And I think that's what we've sort of tapped into, the necessity of people wanting and needing to see what the outcome's going to be. And when I say the spectrum, I've touched briefly on the entry level stuff. We're up the middle, and by no means are we the best. You know, there are people out there who create, we effectively call them pieces of art. We're photorealistic. You've got hyper-realistic, which is, as I said, it's more so pieces of art that are submitted for competitions, architectural competitions, and they may or may not be commissioned on a regular basis for, you know, doing private clients' extension projects. But sure, I think price-wise, you know, there's a very, very big difference between all aspects. And, you know, we're fair. We base pricing off complexity and the scale and size of the project, and then sort of translate that through into time spent, how long it takes us to do things and all that good stuff.
So can you see this changing design styles and sort of making the public a little bit more adventurous?
Oh, absolutely. I think the beauty of the market that we're in is that design trends are ever changing. It's something we have to look into regularly. You know, we have to be up to date with what's sort of current. And as I said before, even though we're not branding ourselves as interior designers by any means, when we're actively working on an interior project, it's something we absolutely have to be conscious of. And I think with the sort of direction that design's going, you know, you'll see a lot of things, especially in the product market, tend to do full circle. And some things that may have been incredibly popular in the 80s and 90s come back around again. People start rediscovering in different ways. And by physically seeing what your project, again, be it interior or exterior, is going to look like digitally before you've either A, spent any money, or B, laid any sort of foundations physically, it just sort of gives people who are commissioning that work a different view and a different option to be able to, you know, rediscuss, change ideas. They might, I could count hundreds of times over the last couple of years whereby we've worked on projects and we've sent them back to the client and they've been over the moon with how the visuals look, but as a result they've actually decided to do their project in a very, very different way. And that's something that, you know, to a lot of people is absolutely invaluable. If you're going to spend that much money, you want to be sure that you're getting exactly what you want. And more often than not, once you've seen, it's not ideal for us sometimes, especially when we're constrained to deadlines and all that sort of stuff with other projects, but we try and obviously help as best we can where we can, whereby if we send a project back and they they love what they see, but it's actually conflicting with, you know, maybe they've already purchased some sofas, or they've already purchased the flooring or the tiles for the bathroom, whatever it might be. They then want to see it changed in CGI, and then they might go for a completely different option. So I think by utilizing CGI where and when you can, as I say, be it through a company like ours, where we sort of strive for photorealism or hyperrealism or sort of entry level, by seeing what it is that you like in terms of preferences, it's something that for a lot of people is a non-negotiable now, and I can't see that changing, to be honest. I think it's here to stay. I think it's also going to be in different capacities. You know, VR is a big one. A lot of people want to see things in different ways. A lot of people don't take in information visually. A lot of people like to read things, you know, a lot of people like to watch videos. And that's something that, again, we've sort of had to adapt in our business over the last 18 months, which is, how do we sort of deliver a still image but also translate that quality through, you know, a 30 second video walkthrough, taking the client through their space or around their space, and giving them sort of a good insight of how that is actually going to look in 3D.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is no slight at all on, you know, perhaps somebody that isn't leading the project. It might be somebody's husband, wife, partner, etc. That, you know, can't, they need to be spoon-fed, because, I'm not quite sure how bifold doors are going to look on this particular extension. I mean, maybe that's a bad example, because I think, how difficult it is to visualise bifold doors in your head. But therefore, you know, some people just do need that lead, don't they?
Yeah, of course they do. And that we like working with clients that question what we do, in the sense of, what would you recommend? What do you think might look good? And although, again, it's not ideal when it comes to timelines and deadlines and things like that, because it does sort of drag the project out maybe longer than it should have. But working with clients and providing that sort of level of customer service, whereby we're actively able to impact someone's forever home, you know, it's a very, very rewarding thing to be able to say we've done. And be it just visualizing some bifold doors, or just be it a little box room because they're unsure of how the, you know, that toilet might look in a garage conversion, something like that, be it tiny or massive, it's equally as rewarding for us, being able to walk a client through the process, show them how it's going to look, and to sort of sign the project off knowing fine well that they're very, very happy with what A, they are going to be getting, and B, what they could be getting, subject to seeing those visuals and maybe making some changes off the back of that. It is all very rewarding for us.
So showboating time then, Michael. What's been the most out there or flamboyant CGI project that you've worked on?
Oh, wow. So off the top of my head straight away, I think it was the winter of 22, we had the pleasure of working on a fairly local project up probably 5 to 10 miles away from where we're based, on an upcoming Airbnb, which was situated on the main train line that sort of runs through parallel with like Newcastle through to Morpeth, then through to Edinburgh, so on and so forth. And the lady on the site lived there with her husband, and they purchased a decommissioned railway carriage, I think is probably the right word, whereby they literally purchased this train and got it delivered to their site, and the sectioned off the front portion of their garden, and had plans of turning it into an Airbnb, whereby train spotters and other people who just maybe like quirky night getaways, things like that, would be able to come and stay. And there was a platform on the back that overlooked the main train line that I mentioned before, where, you know, as I say, for train spotters, it would be something of an absolute dream. And that project was very, very cool. It was very, very unique. We've never worked at anything like that since, and nothing prior to that. It's one of those projects that sort of comes around every now and then, and that was really, really cool to be a part of. And now it actually is live on Airbnb, and as far as I know, it's doing really, really well. I pass it quite regularly, and it does look very, very impressive.
That is just brilliant. And you hope, don't you? I hope that they've got their smart speaker on sort of permanent loop, that's playing train noises, their steam whistles and that sort of stuff. Alexa.
Yeah. It's It's one of those things that for us especially, it can be quite automated. You know, the vast majority of our projects are working with developers and architects on projects that, as I said before, are pretty much signed off. They're ready to go. They've got the spec, and it's a case of, here's the plans, guys. Here's the spec. Let's just sort of bosh it out. You know, we want two externals, one front, one rear, and then maybe the kitchen, diner, bathroom, bedroom. That's sort of your generalized package that we probably sell the most. But from time to time, we get a project like that where it's fantastic. And I mean, off the top of my head, another one that we did last year, which was great, was a guy, I believe down in Exeter, purchased a plot of land, quite a sizable plot of land. And he basically wanted to build his own castle, which is just, you know, everyone's childhood dream, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's one of the ones on our website as well, so people can go on and have a look. And we literally did build that guy a castle. We worked in conjunction with the architects, and they sort of planned everything out structurally, and we just sort of followed the spec down to the last detail, and the guy actually has built himself a castle, which is very impressive.
I know it's not always easy, though, to second guess where trends will go, but if you stick your neck out a bit, where would you say this kind of tech is actually going?
I think it's a scary thing to some extent. I think with how much is coming through on the AI front, to some extent, a lot of what we do may or may not be made redundant. And when I say redundant, I mean not in the rawest sense. I mean, it will always have to have a degree of human interaction. And we've done a few blog posts on this over the last couple of months, because it is quite a big talking point within our sector. And it's also a very, very important talking point within our sector. So I can't stress enough the sort of importance of people in our industry keeping up to date with the trends and the sort of developments on the AI and the tech front. Me and Cam always say we're glorified tech guys. You know, we're able to operate softwares, and we're able to wrap our head around complex softwares that maybe not a lot of people have got time to do. And staying up to date with that is imperative. And I think the direction it's going is a lot of integration, having to use a lot of different softwares in different ways that at the moment, you know, we might not even have an idea of what it's called or what it could be used for. And then when it might just pop up one day, and we might have to just adapt very, very quickly. I think CGI in itself, you know, it's used in film, it's used in music, it's used in pretty much any industry across the board. But specifically talking about the property market and how CGI is used within that, I think the direction it's heading in is exciting. I think there's a lot of art involved. I think it's probably going to come away from being as automated as, here's some plans, crack on. I think there'll be softwares developed whereby, you know, we can literally input some plans, and within 30 seconds there's an exportable model that can be pulled, and then we can texture, and it's suddenly then taking a project going from a 10 business day deadline or timeline, should I say, to maybe it's a 2 or 3 day timeline. And that for us, you know, it's game changing. It's something that we are on the lookout for sure. But I think, you know, a lot of people are going to probably look into these things themselves. And, you know, a lot of people, if they maybe don't have the budget to commission a CGI company, they might just try and have a crack at doing it themselves. And I think the more time that goes on, the more likely that's going to be the case, because things are getting easier, things are getting more user-friendly and more accessible. I think the price of the softwares, even we've seen a huge shift. You know, we sometimes have to pay hundreds and hundreds of pounds a month for certain softwares and licenses, whereas there may be alternatives on the horizon that are infinitely cheaper. Thus, you know, that's then going to be capitalized on by what would be our customers if they want to have a crack at doing it themselves. So I think it's a scary question in itself, because we don't actually know what direction it's heading in.
Yeah.
But in terms of having a good guess, I think there's going to be a lot of AI involved. I think there's going to be a lot of shift in how people commission CGI work. But I guess, you know, that then boils down to how myself and Cam develop the business, how we turn Envision Studios from what it is now to something that's adapting.
Yeah.
Always and getting involved with the newest tech and sort of ever growing in that sense without it becoming a worry.
Where can people find Envision online?
So we've got a presence predominantly on Facebook and Instagram. We also have a website that we regularly upload work to. And the one downside of what we do, being honest, is that because of the nature of what we do, a lot of it's confidential, of it being outsourced. So there is an awful lot of projects that we've done or doing that we just simply can't share, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of people get in touch and say, I've seen what looks like your visuals on another company's website. Can I just confirm that yous have done them, or have they done them in-house in a similar style? It's been like, no, we have done them visuals. Yeah. We were commissioned by those guys, but unfortunately, because of the nature of the project, we can't share it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We try and post as much as possible on Instagram, Facebook, and our website. But mainly, being completely honest, over the last couple of months, LinkedIn's been a godsend for us. Mm. We've been doing an awful lot on there, and it's helped us tap into an unbelievably lucrative market on the commercial front, being in with higher end developers across the country and beyond, having worked in projects over in Ireland recently, as well as Jersey, and tapping into a few other overseas as well that at the moment we can't really talk about. But I think those are the main ones for us, definitely.
So that's Michael Hall of Envision Studios in Newcastle. Great to have you on.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
And yes, you're listening to The Right Move on all the major podcast channels. And we're just about to hear from Charlie Lambden. Now, Charlie's got a few bits to say following the very recent comments by Kevin MacLeod regarding national house builders.
Yes, Simo. And after this, open houses as a sales tool, do they work?
Charlie says. Grand Design's Kevin MacLeod says the UK property market is broken and dysfunctional, and he's talking about UK property being monopolised by big house builders demanding large profits. I once heard a venture capitalist say, people don't do what you say, they do what you pay. And the more I think about that, the truer it is. And it was said in the context of how you remunerate staff, especially staff in a sales position. When you think about big corporations, the problem with big corporations is not the people in them. It isn't. And everyone loves to hate people running big corporations, but it's not the people, because the people just do, they've just got a job. And they do the job that's required of them. And if they don't do the job that's required of them, they don't keep their job. The sole purpose of corporations is profit for shareholders. That's it. Legally, that is what they are obligated to do, to keep on growing profits. And people will say that they're greedy. It's not a question of greed. It's a simple question of the function, the legal and business function of all corporations. And so most corporations, including the ones that are doing the most harm, are still staffed by decent human beings who are just doing the job that they have to do to get paid. And the more senior people get inside those corporations, the more uncomfortable they become with what they're doing, based on feedback and my own experiences in life and friends and people who've got to high places in big corporations. They get increasingly uncomfortable in a linear relationship with their salary going up. The higher their salary, the more uncomfortable they are with what they're doing. Not everyone, of course, but when it comes to house building, there's a particular problem, because take, for example, that Persimmon CEO who left a few years ago, but who took a £100 million bonus. Now, he didn't do that because he's helped the UK's housing crisis in any way, because he didn't. He did it by making mega record profits. 150 million, so it was like £500 million in executive bonus remuneration for Persimmon staff. When every person at every level of that company is tasked with improving the company's profitability by reducing their costs, by keeping their staff costs down, by keeping their material costs down, by getting their selling prices higher, every opportunity will be taken to do that, whether it be what's said in the marketing, whether it be what's said in a sales pitch, whether it's the terms and conditions of the contract that they get the customers to sign up to. And in almost all cases, this goes against the interests of customers. When you look at the house building industry as a whole, there's an argument that says it goes against the interests of society as a whole. I don't think anybody would disagree that the house building sector hasn't in any way helped solve the housing crisis. But it's not their job. It is not the job of a house building corporation to solve the housing crisis. It isn't. Never has been, never will be. It is 100% the fault of government, policymakers, planning laws, tax laws, and tax schemes that have led us to the housing crisis that we're in. So you can't actually blame the people running the corporations. It is a policy problem at a government level, and of course corporate policies. But corporate policies are, let's make more money, let's make more money. That's what we're going to do. We're going to be compared against our competitors to see who's the most profitable. That's the only metric they have, who's making the most profit. So as long as corporations are required to make profit uber alles over everything else, this problem will continue to get worse, and we will get more and more expensive, poorer and poorer quality homes. Wherever the option exists, I think people should always choose smaller businesses, family-run businesses, family-run house builders, for example, where they live in the part of the country where they're building houses and people know them and they've got a personal reputation at stake. And so their personal pride is going to mean that the quality of homes they're building is probably a bit better than the giant home builders, because no one at the giant home builders, no one individual person has anything to gain from that company getting a better reputation for the quality of its homes. But a privately owned house builder, then there is something to be said, because if you win awards for the quality of the design of your homes, it doesn't just help your business, it also makes you feel like what you're doing is worthwhile. Whereas if you're building really poor quality rubbish homes but you're hitting your profit targets, job done. You don't care. It doesn't affect you personally that you're building rubbish homes, as long as you make the targets, right? Well, it's the same in corporate estate agencies. No one really cares. No individuals are incentivized to care about individual customer experience. And who's the last example of a corporation that is not serving the industry or the public or society? Rightmove.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. And some very interesting food for thought, things to reflect on there off the back of those McLeod comments. He certainly didn't mince his words with that. Now, the time seems to have passed really, really quickly for the self-build we've been following for more than a few months now. Alan and his team over there in Grafton Ridges in Northamptonshire, building behind a new pub, well, kind of converting a barn, but they've essentially had to do most things from scratch. So let's catch up and see just how close they are to completion.
Hi, it's Alan here, the Silver Birch Barn at the back of the White Hart in Grafton Regis. It's been ever so exciting. We've had all the roof put on, some top quality Spanish slate. We could have gone on down a cheaper route and saved ourselves about £1,600 by having a lesser quality slate, but we thought it wasn't worth doing, really. So it looks absolutely beautiful. I've never seen a roof as pretty in my life, but then I've never really paid much attention to roofs. And the underfloor heating's all gone down, all the pipework for that, and this enormous manifold. So it's all fed back to the manifold, ready for the boiler and the air source heat pump to go in. And then I had a group of guys arrived on Saturday to put the screed down on the floor. So all the insulation went down, the underfloor heating went down, and then in three hours, these four guys, who never stopped, mixed all the screed and tampered it all down, and we've now got a lovely, lovely smooth surface on which to lay the tiles and everything. I don't know whether I mentioned that the windows are all in. Powder-coated aluminium double-glazed windows, which look beautiful against the stone. And the 5 metres of bifold doors have all gone in as well. But he put the bifold doors in, and then he's gone home and not come back to finish it off completely, because he's got to mastic it in and everything. He took the blooming keys with him, so I can't even open the doors to see how they work. But yeah, it's very exciting here, and as with all projects, we've run out of money, but we are exploring various avenues to try and get the rest of the money through. So yeah, I'll update you again soon.
Yes, you are with The Right Move with Simo and JP. Now, Simo, I saw friend of the show, I'll have to put in there, Nick Shabbat, that's a contractual obligation, friend of the show, posting that one of the properties, and again, another awe-inspiring, beautiful Devonian property, I think it was, one of the properties that he's marketing had an open house. So, I mean, we've not touched on this before, or not so far, but open houses, generally kind of, what's the format? Do you like them or not?
You know, I think a couple of years ago, and I can only really talk about the markets that I operate in, of course. You know, a couple of years ago, we would have had a lot of buyers ready to view and wanting to view that were procedable buyers. So having blocking out a period in the diary, I don't particularly like open houses in the sense that we're going to be there, you know, it's a bit like the auction viewers. We're going to be there between 10 and 12 on Thursday afternoon. Come and say hello. There's a number of reasons for that. One is from a security perspective. I obviously don't like to not know who is coming through the door. And also from a marketing perspective as well, I, as an agent, want to know those people's details because, of course, if they don't like the property they've come to see, then we want to be able to talk to them in the future about something else.
True.
So they, you know, if I'm giving up my time to show someone a property, I want to know who they are and I want to find out that information so that they can be on my database. So personally, I'm not a fan of open houses, although I'm a fan of, when the market conditions are right, blocking out a period in the diary and then booking people in and then effectively saying, look, I'm sorry, we're full. So if we can't book any more in, you know, having an open house like akin to an auction open house where you're there and you just let people come and roam the property. I've been to those in the past from a buyer's perspective, and it is just like a melee in a property, and you can't sort of get any real feel by talking to an agent or talking things through. So they may work for Nick, you know, in his environment. You know, he's down in that sort of holiday-esque environment where, you know, having people come along because they're there might be quite a, you know, a useful thing. But for me, I don't particularly like them as in a true open house, but I do quite like having some control over that and squaring it off into a block of time that we say, right, vendor, leave the property. We're going to take over and we're going to have six people, let's say, booked in for those viewings.
Have you come across any evidence directly, indirectly, anecdotally or otherwise that an open house can, in some instances, bring about a more rapid sale or, I hesitate to say the phrase, sort of higher price, but, you know, the kind of a top line price. Have you ever seen that?
It works for certain things, like I just mentioned auctions. You know, it certainly works in the sense that if you've got a lot of people after a property, it will drive people to feel that they want to expand on their offer potentially, if that were the case. But ultimately, no, I don't see that for the type of sales that I do day to day. But as I said, it very much is dependent on the property and the type of environment that we're in. But for me, yeah, I don't really see that in my line of work.
Okay. Well, look, just one last thing on that, Simo, and bearing in mind that you are reticent to kind of endorse them, you know, that's not a path you want to go down. But outside of your patch, outside of where your agencies are, if somebody has an open house recommended to them, they're going to do one. You got any thoughts about maximising its effectiveness? What would you do if you felt, I won't say strong-armed into it, but if you were going to do one, probably against your wishes by the sounds of things, but what would you do to kind of make sure the bar was as high as possible?
Well, you know, you're going to have to work with the vendors very closely, make sure that the property is absolutely in its pristine state and, you know, it's been really, really thought out and staged well. Maximize that time, maximize that. I would want to make sure that the agent is going to know how many people are coming through the door, because an open house could deliver nothing, could deliver no viewings. And that's where I think being in control of it as an agent, where you know that somebody is booked in, you know, they're booked in for a time within that, is very important. As a vendor, I think you would want to make sure that the agent is on board with that. And you're not just accepting a fact that an agent is trying to tell you to go down the route of an open house and actually not a soul turns up. You know, timing's a strong factor. You know, you don't want to be doing an open house at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. You know, you'd want to be doing it at 10 a.m. on a Saturday when people are raring to go. You know, it's getting everything right around that. That's not always easy. That really isn't. You know, you'd need to make sure the agent is absolutely 100% confident that they are going to have people through the door. They're going to maximize that. You as a vendor are going to all the effort of getting that house ready. If no one turns up, you've completely wasted your time.
Yeah.
And that's why having control, if you're going to do an open house, you need to know who is coming. So you need to say, get the agent to absolutely book people in rather than just put a board up and say, come this way.
Yeah, really sound advice. Really, really useful, Simo. So thank you for that.
You're with The Right Move. Subscribe to us now on all major podcast apps.
Now, have we got a podcasting treat for you? Who knows and who dares to dream where this could go? You have heard, I'm sure, of Selling Sunset. It's time for our slightly more West Country-based version. And tales only Simo can tell.
Who are Selling Somerset?
Now, JP, I want to tell you a little story that happened not too long ago. I was invited by a lady to come and value her property because sadly she's going through a slight breakup with her other half. And I knew where I was going. Nice area. Did my research on the property and I thought, this is a cracking little property that, you know, they're splitting up. We might want to be the lister. Anyway, so I arrived. She came outside and she said, oh, hi, pleased to meet you and all this. And she said, you're all right with dogs? I said, yeah, yeah, I'm all right with dogs. I said, it depends on the dog, but, you know, I'm all right with dogs. She said, you'll be fine. So in I go. I kid you not, there was a Great Dane, there was a Labrador, and there was a Cocker Spaniel. It's not a joke, by the way. This isn't, you know, going into the pub and we see three very different animals there. But the Cocker Spaniel was tugging at my ankles. The Great Dane was trying to get round my head, frankly. And she said, I thought you said you're okay with dogs. I said, yeah, I am, but I'm not okay with those dogs. And the house, I have to tell you, was a bit wrecked, as you can probably imagine. Needless to say, I don't think she's going to become a client of mine.
Get me a cider. We're Selling Somerset.
Simo, before we go, got to ask you, very quick update from you on the legendary Charlie Simmons Racing. How's he doing at the moment?
Well, he's doing quite well, to be fair. He's still running. He's running the whole year in the Daniel Ricciardo series, which is a fantastic championship that we've got involved with, making a number of friends and a number of inroads.
Excellent.
I have just invested in his very own DRS 100 cart, and he had his first outing just last week at Clay Pigeon. In that very, very different to the carts that he's driving in the series, because arrive and drive, so they're a bit more, you know, tuned down. But he sadly had quite a lumpy accident at Clay Pigeon where he ended up in the barriers. He's fine, and that's the important thing. Sprained wrist, cart's fine, thank God. all going well. And as we record this weekend, we're getting ready for round two at Rissington.
Well, send him our best. We're in his corner rooting for him. Good to talk to you, Simo. Thanks for all your excellent sage advice from inside the industry. And hey, we'll see you next time.
10-4, JP.